Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Thank you very much indeed for that. Now, the mother of a man with an intellectual disability who was a resident in the Brothers of Charity Lota facility in Cork for 9 years has gone public today. Margaret Best, the mother of Kenneth Best, fears that if abuse in the institutions identified in the government scoping inquiry is to be investigated properly, then the voice of children with disabilities must be heard, she says. She spoke with me just before we came on air and first told me what happened to Kenneth as an infant.
Kenneth was born normally and he suffered severe brain damage at the age of approximately 4 months following a vaccine that he had received, a childhood vaccine. And he developed seizures, which he had for a good number of years afterwards. And he became very, ill in the sense that his brain was damaged completely and he was nonverbal, incontinent. And he used to scream quite a lot. He was difficult then from then on. Mm-hmm. And the seizures were a big problem for me at the time.
Margaret, like any mother, you sought the help of professionals in terms of what should be done.
I had went to a lot of professionals with Kenneth because I thought that I could reverse the brain damage. I was very, very young at the time. And I had some notion in my head that I could deal with all of this and that it would come right, but it didn't. The professionals were there, they were all there, and they were giving advice, various types of advice, with all these psychologists and doctors and consultants and you name it, they were all there. But in any event, I think the whole thing was at the end of the day was that he was becoming too much to manage and that he would be better placed in a place where he could be properly educated and that they would get the seizures to stop and that he would be trained to do something in life.
Okay.
Right? Not necessarily go to university, but he would be able to do something in life. That, however, did not happen. In fact, he regressed rather than went any way forward at all.
Okay. And can I ask you, that was at the age of five that the doctors and the professionals were telling you perhaps he would do well in Lota. Is that the place that he was
in? Oh, yes. They said that was the best place for him because they had a fantastic training facility. They knew how to deal with children. They could cope with them. They had loads of people like him there and they would be he would be well looked after and well educated.
Okay. It was becoming very difficult at home and you took professional advice and in the hope of improving the situation for Kenneth and your family generally,
you
sent him to Lota. Now, can I ask you, you said he regressed. How long was it before you noticed a regression after he went to Lota?
Well, he was never, like, for example, before he went in there, he could eat with a spoon. I had him eating with a spoon. He was able to use a spoon to eat his food. That stopped fairly quickly. And I tried to get an explanation as to why that stopped. And at one stage, I was taught, well, we've no time to be standing over children. We have too many. We're too busy. All this kind of thing, excuse me, mm-hmm. Whereas it was being said to me. And excuse me again. Sorry, my throat.
Don't worry.
He said that various things were said to me. I got various explanations and all that was happening as far as I could see was that there was one tablet following another tablet, anticonvulsant drugs here, antipsychotic therapy there, something else, this, that and the other. And there was a total mixture of drugs was what I was seeing in the sense that this was the type of treatment that he was getting. But mm-hmm. They said that he needed all of those because they needed to control the seizures.
Okay. And it wasn't even just that, Margaret, was it? You had constant concerns about various things about his care in Lota.
I had constant concerns because I was always in and out and querying as to why he was bruised, why he had blood in his face, why he had blood in his clothes. And I was told there were other boys that an older boy hit him or this happened or that happened. There was always some excuse.
Mm-hmm. And you got access to his files then? Was it in 2001? I think some of the files beforehand.
I did eventually get access to them, and of course when I had them, what I saw just sickened me beyond belief.
Right.
The conditions that they were living in, the horror of having rats and mice crawling all over their dormitories, sluice rooms not working properly, no hot water for bats or anything like that. Complaints from the brothers that the surgery should not be opened on a Sunday morning, no matter how sick a child was.
Just the brothers of charity, yeah.
Yes, that's it, exactly. And all of this was going on, and I went to them, I went to the Brothers of Charity, and I said, why was Kenneth like this, and why is he being marked? And I got a response from one particular brother, well, you have to hit a bold child.
Oh, no. God.
Why would you have to hit a bold child? Like, these children were, you know, they're vulnerable, and you have this these people who have no training with children whatsoever, given the run of these places and left to their own devices, no watchdogs, nothing. And they knew absolutely nothing about children.
And yet they had
total control.
You sent your child there in the hope that he would be cared for and developed
mostly for training and you know, that to train him to be not to be toilet trained, even that a simple task, you know.
But it was the opposite from the files you saw, that he had constant bouts of diarrhoea.
Absolutely horrendous, and that was any time he was there. While he was at home with me, nothing. While he was there, it wasn't even diarrhoea; it was dysentery, and he wound up in hospital on several occasions because of the filth, and it was pure filth and nothing else.
Yeah, do you know what
the place was filthy?
Do you know what upset me, Margaret? Even reading about some of the reports about the files that you saw, that you were horrified to note that his groin area was covered in white blisters, and that reports of his records in Lota showed him being distressed and crying on several occasions in the early years at Lota. That broke my heart, I must say.
Exactly. He was, and he was... But, you know, that's the other thing that he didn't... Like, his groin area was always of concern to me because that seemed to be the area was the most... hurtful and difficult to. He couldn't complain, he couldn't cry out, he was obviously in severe pain.
Remind people why he couldn't, just in case people are just tuning in, why could he not complain about these things?
Because he's nonverbal, he doesn't speak, so therefore there's no voice for him. You know, the only people to speak for him are his family. I saw one letter where an internal memo said, look, she's in again, and we have to appear to be doing something just to keep the peace.
Yeah. I read another line from the records, Margaret, and if I may, it's September 13th, 1979. Found, and the name is erased, in bed with Ken Best, nappy partly taken off.
Yeah. But that's exactly what the point I'm making. He was incontinent, and he used to have nappies, and I collected him one evening from Lota, and when I tried to change his nappy, I just immediately put a clean one on, and I ran him straight to the doctor because I couldn't deal with what I was seeing. And the doctor just looked at me, saw the situation, saw me. I said, I'm just after picking him up. I said, there's something not right. And I said, he didn't do this himself. He wrote a short letter at the time to say that this must never happen again. But when I looked for the records, that note was no longer there.
Oh, God.
They saw me really as somebody to just get rid of. I was a nuisance. I was always in about something. I used to give him beautiful new clothes. I'd buy him new toys. I'd go down there the next day. There'd be none of the clothes. They were never seen again. Never seen again. They were never on him. And the toys, never to be seen.
Can I ask?
All these things were removed.
And that time?
Where they went, I don't know, because I didn't even see them in other children, if that makes sense to him. Even if I saw him in another little boy that was next to him, I'd have said, fine, you know. it wouldn't have mattered to me. But he never wore them, any of the clothes I got him.
You finally brought him home, Margaret, in 1984. How did that come about?
Well, the end of 1983, there was a bit of, there was more problems. And he had developed a lot of abscesses in his mouth and his teeth and gums, and they were never looked after. And I was going here and going there trying to see him. Then his sight was another problem. His eyes would get infected. I'd have to take him to my own doctor to deal with that. They never brought him anywhere. And on one occasion, I told them that he was not to be vaccinated. They still gave him the vaccine behind my back anyway. The parents had no say whatsoever. You relinquished all your rights the minute you walked in that door. And that, to me, was wrong. That's very wrong.
I wanted to ask you about when Kenneth came home, if I may. Did you notice any remarkable behaviour, or did you notice any behaviour that may have occurred at home as a result of being in Lota?
No, what I noticed most of all was that we could never go near him from a forward position. If I walked towards him, his hands would immediately go up to cover his head. So I tried to walk from the side and let him know I was coming from the side, that I'd be going in towards him from the side as opposed to facing him. And now that lasted about 15 months. We had a good over 12 months of that. And then gradually that stopped. And now, since it stopped, when I give him something now, at night he'll put his head forward to me. So I always give him a kiss in the forehead at night when he's going to bed. And he puts his head forward. So he's not afraid to use his head now to let me have access to his head.
So he knows, and he knows for a long time, that he's back in a loving environment. Yeah.
That he's actually safe. But even to this day, he doesn't like men. If they're strange, if I have people into the house, I have to be there at all times.
And he's 55 now, Margaret?
He's 55, but that fear has never left him. It has never left him. He's constantly watching to know, and he's watching me. His eyes are on me the whole time. And I keep talking to him, saying, it's okay, I'm here, and I'm not going, and I'm standing here in the room, and everything is fine.
Yeah, the poor man. It's a fear of half a century, isn't it?
It is. He's 55 now, you know, so it is difficult, yeah.
You want to be mindful of people who might be in a similar position to Kenneth now, who might not be able to speak for themselves.
I know, and there are people out there, and I'm well aware of it. They're just worn down from it, and they may not have the strength to go out there and say that they want a voice for their child who was in those places, but they should have that voice. Those children should not, they cannot be excluded from any inquiry that's going on.
Give our best to Kenneth, Margaret, and thank you very much.
Thank you so much, and thank you for taking the time to talk to me. Thank you very much indeed.
We'll talk soon. And that was Margaret Best, the mother of Kenneth Best there, underlining that people who were in institutions or in schools run by anyone, they need a voice too if they're of a vulnerable disposition. Now, if you've been affected by any of the issues in that interview with Margaret Best, help is available at rte.ie/helplines.